Blog Talk Radio.
By author Stephen James and Jose Castillo. Tonight's show is going to feature screenwriter and filmmaker Ivo Raja. You think you need to follow the rules to tell a great story? Well, think again, because in this paradigm-shattering interview, Ivo talks us through what lies at the heart of a great story, and according to him, it's no structure. So we're going to dispense with all the commercials and all the other fun stuff, and we're going to hit right now into the Story Blender. Again, every other Friday night here at 7:30 Pacific time, you'll be able to hear great shows. We had Steve Berry the other night. We got Susan May Warren, and we got Dana Del Lowe coming up. So a lot of great things. Make sure you check out SuspenseRadioNetwork.com for more information on all the shows on the radio network. So now here we go, everybody, the Story Blender with very special guest, Ivo Raja.
Welcome to the Story Blender. I'm Stephen James.
And I'm Jose Castillo.
And this is where great storytellers share the secrets of great storytelling. Our guest today is an award-winning director and screenwriter. He's directed spots and content for Disney, Colgate, TMZ, 7-Up, and many others, and has produced indie films that have played at dozens of festivals across North America. He's currently at work on his second feature film, The Art of Shaving, which I'm hoping he'll tell us a bit about today. Ivo Raja, thanks for coming. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Fantastic, yeah. Now, one of the way that we first connected up was in an article that you wrote, I think it was for a scriptwriting magazine, and it was about breaking the rules in storytelling, which we are all about here, as long as we can connect up with our audiences. And so you'd listed a number of films that you thought broke the conventions or broke the rules that are out there. Do you remember that article? Do you remember any of those films? I thought that was a great take on looking at unique ways of telling stories.
Yes. If I may, I'll just step back a couple steps before that article and just to kind of qualify where, you know, the genesis of it. And that is, screenwriting has this strange kind of rule-based obsession. And as, you know, as we all as writers constantly grow, I mean, one is never fully mature, right? And so we try to learn ways and discover ways of telling stories in a new and interesting way. However, screenwriting has this same sort of books and seminars that tell you you must do this and you must do that. You must have three acts. You must have a, you know, inciting incident that happens on such and such page, and there's a mid reversal, and if somebody has to die around page 75. But seriously, I mean, it's amazing. They don't call them rules because that would be like a no-no, but then there's a whole bunch of other terms, paradigms, and, you know, beat sheets, and you must follow them because here's a list of films that follow them, and they were successful films. And I always thought of that as kind of paint-by-numbers approach.
Right.
And film being, you know, to me, film is an art. I mean, it's also, you know, an entertainment industry and all these things. But at its height, it's an art. And so there's amazing films out there that don't follow any of that stuff. They're amazing. And so I would get into these big discussions with, you know, professors and instructors and colleagues because for some reason, there's this huge belief, if only I follow this, you know, pick whichever one you want structure, my film or my play is going to be successful. And so I embarked on a total quest to basically break all of those myths. If nothing else, myself,
sounds
right?
good to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, and thus one of my biggest pet peeves was that a lot of these rules state that a goal for a successful screenplay needs to have a goal for the main protagonist, and that is certainly not true, because there's tons of films who are very successful and they're not built around the goal, they're built around a question or a series of questions, right? And so we can have amazing films that basically don't particularly have goals in the classical sense of a screenplay structure and setup, right? You know, anything from you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off to The Breakfast Club to Il Postino, It applies across nations. It's not universal to anything. To 8.5, Fellini's films, Bergman's films, amazing films, you know, Fight Club, book adaptations, are built around questions. And they absolutely work. And they're almost more fascinating because it's less overt of in terms of plot, which has a mystery element. And so I think that's a wonderful way to build a story. And it's an alternative way, and it's absolutely viable.
Yeah, my my book, Story Trump Structure, is written mainly for novelists, and it's on how to, you know, write unforgettable fiction by breaking the rules. And one of the things I mentioned there is the idea of using moral dilemmas to drive stories forward. So instead of writing a story that's agenda-driven, you do it with dilemma-driven stories. And so instead of saying, you know, it's important to tell the truth, you know, ask the question, what's more important, truth or justice, and let that drive the story. And I think you're onto something. You know, stories that can be driven forward through either moral dilemmas or questions and build on that mystery, I think that can be a great way to draw readers or listeners or, in your case, viewers into the story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, you know, moral dilemma is a choice, right? And so if for a screenplay to be based on that, it would go back to, like, which one is this person going to pick, right? So that's
right.
Kind of a question-based approach. So, yeah, absolutely. I think it's absolutely acceptable. And moreover, I think we need more alternative approaches, because whatever's coming out of the mainstream film production is bland.
Well, and that's so true.
And
I
might be brutally honest here, but it is. You know, the studio films are not exciting anymore.
Yeah, and you put yourself in the role of the audience, and I agree with you that some of those delightful films that you mentioned are surprising and delighting to those audiences, because it doesn't follow the same formula, because
correct,
all of a sudden they're thrown into a situation that they're unfamiliar with. You mentioned a couple of examples. Do you have one that you've kind of latched onto that you said, you know, this is a great example of breaking the rules in storytelling for film?
Midnight in Paris, the Woody Allen film recently, I mean, last few years came out, I think is an awesome example of not really having any sort of goal in a story that works just fabulously well. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful screenplay and a wonderful film, because it, you know, the thematic premise of, you know, was life better for a writer back in, you know, the golden age when Hemingway was writing and in Paris, and F. Scott Fitzgerald, or is now the time and that's all you got, you know? And so the whole what it's about is actually weaved into the whole plot, and that's just a wonderful, wonderful artistry, and that's why I loved it. And it fully works. You're never... You know, because I think there's this fear among screenwriters that if you don't have a goal and if you don't have a main hero with a goal, that there will be boredom, and there will be long periods of non-action, and that is simply not the case. And this is a great, Midnight Paris is a great example of that.
So when we have a main character, protagonist, and he's thrown into whatever situation is precipitating this film or this story, he probably has some kind of unmet desire because he's going to take actions toward you know, trying to meet whatever the desire would be. But instead of building it around him just pursuing a goal, how would you say, okay, I'm going to build this around a question, and this character still is going to be, you know, important to the story. Obviously, he's going to make, you know, significant choices that matter. How do you do that as you're building it or writing something or pulling it together?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because in Midnight in Paris, I think it's actually, the story is built on a dilemma, what you had said before, how you like to work. His dilemma is, should I continue being what he refers to himself as a Hollywood hack, screenwriter in Hollywood, or should I move to Paris and be a novelist? So that's a huge dilemma for an artist, sell out versus following your art. And the way it's built is that it has several rounds of allowing the hero to enter this alternative kind of fantasy or sci-fi, if you will, past, where he gets to experience certain things and certainly learn stuff about himself that helps him come to the conclusion that he doesn't want to be a hack, and that the answer doesn't lie in moving, 80 years into the past, but actually moving ahead in his daily life. So it's a really good affirmation of, you got to stick to your guns and do what you can do at this moment in time that was given to you. So in this case, there's certainly a main character who has this, but he really ruminates. But the way it's built around slowly peeling off the issues in his life is very nice, because it's not overt and it's not, just the struggling writer sitting in a room and we have, 80 pages of voiceover, his thoughts. It's very entertaining, and that's what makes it fun.
It's interesting you bring up that question of the protagonist in the movie, because it's one of the questions I was going to ask you. As all of us who create content, we're constantly that battle of art versus paying the bills. And
of course,
particularly in filmmaking, I know you've had the opportunity to work with a lot of corporate clients as well as telling your own stories for yourself in film. How do you balance those between that idea of, hey, I'm going to create content, for corporate, but I also want to use film to tell stories?
Well, I consider myself very lucky, because no matter what I do, any day on set for me is a good day. If we're shooting, I can't complain. I mean, I have friends that have 9-to-5 jobs, and I sometimes shoot at a Caribbean beach, and how can I complain about that? Even if it's perfect fine, nothing bad about this possibly. And I try to bring a story element to everything I do, because I think, the best of advertising is really good storytelling as well, just, in a 60-second format or a 30-second format. Many times that is possible, most of the time, especially if it's a client that, has a solid base in quality and a good understanding of what their brand is about. Very rarely it's not possible, and then those are the jobs that we have, memories we want to erase, like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind kind of thing. But they're very rare. I have to say, I've been working with really smart people, and so that's one side, and that's the side that pays the bills, and it's lovely. But then what really gets my juices going is independent, film screenplays that don't have to go through this large corporate approval process.
Right.
and there's a big complaint, and it's a big frustration for a lot of filmmakers who do end up getting to that kind of studio level production, is they get bogged down in the thing, and all these people, they don't get it. And if you look at the individuals that are involved, you know, the producers and development executives and all those guys, individually speaking, fabulous people, smart, great. You put it into a group, and all of a sudden, this is death by committee, right? This is why, this is why a lot of these films that are produced and end up as kind of like camels, you know, and they're really not well designed, because there's too many chefs in the kitchen. And so for me, what I'm excited about, since I have a little bit of that on the corporate side, I am like, I'm almost just about, you know, indie. It's you do what you do, and your successes and your mistakes, you own 100%. And I love that. I think that's really also a way to discover new stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned something a minute ago that I really liked, and that was the idea of telling a story in 30 seconds or 60 seconds for some of these clients that you've worked with. I'm fascinated by that. What's the kernel, what's the core that you're trying to do if you're telling a 30 or 60 second commercial or corporate kind of event? I know for me, when I look at story, I look at story as my two word definition is, a story is transformation unveiled, that stories are about transformative events, either within the characters or around the characters. And so when I look at, you know, telling short stories, I always look for what's the transformative moment. But I'm curious, as far as you as a filmmaker, what do you look for?
To me, you know, in commercial short content, which is basically what commercials are, and now it is online, really, so they're a little longer than not 30 seconds anymore, but, you know, up to 2 minutes. I always think, and I'm totally convinced of this, that there's one core element, let's call it common denominator, or the what's it about, or the theme, or the one unifying element that kind of touches organically on everything that we're doing, right, in every spot. And so I always try to first spend time to discover what that is. Genuinely, not just something tacked on, oh, this is about happiness, you know, that's too generic, but something really that's meaningful for this. And it doesn't matter that this is a brand. I mean, it's a story is a story, you know, it's about a character or a brand, it doesn't really matter, because that core has to be there. You know, if it's something that's esoteric, maybe I keep it to myself. If it's something that's more palatable to general audiences, I'll share it with the client. But I base then my decisions on that, you know, the shots, the story, how it's going to unfold, the emotion, and, you know, how we can best tell this story with, you know, a very limited amount of time. So, you know,
we talk to a lot of authors. Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, we talk to a lot of writers and authors here at the Story Blender, and a lot of the principles for telling great stories apply to film as well. But what you were saying earlier, death by committee can happen to something. When we're writing stories, a novelist is kind of just, he is the only, you know, kind of sole voice that's out there. Do you see anything different as far as telling a story on the page as opposed to telling it on a screen?
Well, the thing, and I do envy novelists when I write, because you are the captain and you are the creator, and you might run into, you know, maybe an editor or a publisher occasionally, right? I don't know. I didn't have the experience. But, you know, when you write a screenplay, it's not a final document. A screenplay is a transitory document. It's just something that is used to create something else, right? So a screenplay basically flares up and dies. and in the process, there's a lot of people involved. So if you look at some films, and I don't have examples off the top of my head, but if you look at some films who ended up being blah, and then read the original screenplay, you're going, oh my God, how did this go from here to this? Because the original screenplay actually might have been really good. And then it just gets watered down because, you know, producers say, oh, I have a perfect example, actually. Brazil. I don't know if you remember this film. Terry Gilliam, like 1984, I would say. Do you remember the film?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like a dystopian future. You know, Terry Gilliam is a fantastic filmmaker, storyteller.
He is.
And there's a wonderful book about this event. It's called The Battle of Brazil, that tracked the complete unraveling of this disaster that this filmmaker made an amazing film, and then the head of Universal just wanted to, you know, add his touches on it, and so he wanted a happy ending, and, you know, checklist of those Hollywood required things that the things we're discussing, you know, we hate today. And he just created an alternative version that was very bland, and you know, Terry's film ended up getting some amazing coverage with critics, and so they did release both versions. But
interesting.
So it's really a tough proposition to be in.
Yeah, it is. It's another Terry Gilliam film, which is interesting to watch. For those of us listening, if you're interested in that process, you ought to watch Lost in La Mancha. And it's
absolutely
a documentary about Terry Gilliam trying to make a movie called Man of La Mancha. And it's hilarious, just the endless meetings that happen. And, you know, you see all the people involved, from costumes to set makers to everybody that's trying to take this story and make it into reality. And they never do. That's the, you know, so you have this great screenplay that started out and then something that winds up not happening.
Yes, and you call it hilarious. I call it the worst horror film I have ever seen.
I'm sure. For a screenwriter, director, producer, I can't imagine. It's horrible to watch.
Oh my God! And I love this guy. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. I think he's absolutely brilliant. First of all, he was the only American Monty Python, and I'm an insane fan of Monty Python. So like, I just love this guy since I ever saw the first, you know, Flying Circus episode. But I watched this and I just cringe. I'm like, oh my God, poor guy. Everything is just one thing after another, you know, natural disasters, his main actor getting sick. I mean, it just couldn't get any worse. It's just awful. That's the part of it. As a filmmaker, you don't have that sole creator. You have to give up a lot of it and just work with tons of people.
That'd be hard for me. I don't know. I've always, you know, I was just actually in L.A. last week speaking with some producers about some projects, and I've always thought it would be neat to take some of my books to film, but people, I say, well, you know, they'll change it. I'm like, well, I know that, but no, they say, they'll change it. Like, okay. But they're different mediums, and, you know, you can't tell a story the exact same on print as in film, because, of course, we have, you know, internal thoughts that we can use on the page, and unless you do a voiceover or something like that in film, it's, you know, it's just not available. So there's different tools in different ways, but I think something that you mentioned earlier when you were talking was this idea of emotion, and I think whatever, you know, venue we're doing to try and tell stories, we want to grab hold of that emotion of our audience and try to tap into that. So it's not just a series of events that we're showing, but it's something that's that has meaning to them.
Yes, absolutely. It has to have, you know, I'll jump back into one of the must-haves, right? And I'd like to give an example of that, how it's not a must-have. You know, one of the must-haves in screenplays, like, every single event has to drive the plot forward, right? And I always thought that was total bogus. And then if you look at the movie Pulp Fiction, which was a wonderful, you know, structure-breaking approach and definitely a great film to study on alternative structure, it has this scene where the Travolta character and Uma Thurman go dancing. And that has absolutely nothing to do with the plot. Zero. You could take it out and nothing would change. And then I knew this, but then I confirmed it watching an interview with Tarantino where he said, oh, I had Travolta. I had to have him dance. So I've written this, right? So here's a filmmaker who just is in awe of this actor and his dancing skills. And he writes a scene so he can show off Travolta's dancing skills. Has nothing to do with plot, right? yet it perfectly worked. It was a wonderful scene. We all loved it. And that's a perfect example of, no, you can add stuff that just kind of seasons it and makes it richer and creates a bond between the characters. And so by him doing that, not slot-driven, he actually upped the emotion between the characters, because obviously a dance is kind of a pre-sexual ritual, right? So set up the rest of the story inadvertently. I always thought that was a wonderful example of how it doesn't have to be plot-driven, but it has to be emotional, you know?
Yeah, it certainly is a movie where, you know, it's not filmed narratively in order, and, you know, even people have debated, well, who's the story even about? Who's the protagonist of this film, you know, Pulp Fiction? And so I think, you know, any story, as long as we grip the audience, we give the audience, you know, one of my mottos is always give the reader what they want or something better. And so it's all great storytellers. I think they do that. Either give us what we want, or they twist and they turn it, and we, man, I can't, you know, plug that into a formula that I've heard of, but it was better than the formula. That's what we want to,
yes,
you know, do as we shoot for this.
So tell me about the art of shaving. I've been cultivating my beard this winter for the first time in my life. I've had a goatee my whole life, but I finally grew out the whole beard, and we were reading through some of your stuff, and I was like, the art of shaving, that sounds very interesting. Tell us about the project you're working on right now.
Yeah, I'm sporting a beard myself, so we're brothers in that.
Awesome.
yeah, The Art of Shaving is, again, it's a film that is very, it's a contained story, not a typical structure in the sense of goals and you know, paradigms and all of that. And it's a very simple story. It's basically six adults from very different walks of life who are stuck together at this luxury penthouse condo the morning after a fabulous party that took place there. And the party was organized by a film producer. So several of those people want something, you know, want to pitch their headshots or scripts or whatnot to him. And due to circumstances, they're stuck there for an entire day, and he's there too, but he's hiding his identity, so they don't know that he is who he is. And so it's just the story unfolds between these six characters who get to know each other throughout the day until finally they do realize who he is, and then there's some, you know, little bit of craziness that happens in the end. Very small story. It's kind of a satire comedy. I call it the Breakfast Club for adults, you know.
So. When you look at some films, because it looks like you kind of share the same passion that I do for great films, are there any stories or other films that you think of that you bring out important storytelling principles? I mean, we've been talking about breaking the rules, which is good, but also about connecting with, you know, your audience. Are there any that pop to your mind that say, this is a great example of this principle that's kind of universal as far as reaching an audience, whether it has anything to do with structure or not, but an aspect of story or storytelling reaching audiences that you think those films really did a good job at?
Sure. I think, you know, what to me the most important thing as both storyteller and screenwriter and filmmaker, and what I look for in films, or at least viscerally, you know, like, is context. You know, to me, there has to be sufficient context for me to get hooked into. I don't need to like the character. I don't need to like the premise. I don't need to like the milieu or you know, genre, but if I get the context of what's going on and that hooks me into it, then I think I'm in for the ride. And there's many films that if I would read their log lines, I would be like, you know, it's going to be a kind of, you know, boring film to watch.
Right.
But then one of the recent films I've seen that's a great example is Whiplash. You're just it's up for award season. And it's about this kid who is a drummer in a Juilliard type school in New York. He wants to be a professional jazz drummer. So when I read the premise, I was like, ah, okay, this could be interesting. And then I watched the movie, and it's just amazing. It's really, truly amazing. So much energy. But the context is what got me into it. You know, I understood who this kid was, and he wanted to do something with himself. And I can totally identify with that because, you know, he's a creator of sound, and we're creators of words and content. So, context, you know, that's something I think all great films have in common. To think of other examples,
you know, when you were talking a minute ago, I thought of this one movie. I don't know if you've even seen it, but when you were talking about context and emotion, I thought of it. It's called Lars and the Real Girl. And,
yes, I've seen it.
Yeah, and if you looked at the log line for that film, you'd be like, what? Guy falls
same
in love
thing.
With a
yeah.
sex doll? You'd be like,
yeah.
What kind of a film is this? But when you watch it, you're drawn in, and all of a sudden, by the end, you're just longing for this character to have a real relationship with somebody. And it was a little indie film, powerful film. It was good storytelling. It didn't follow any kind of, you know, traditional structure that I could see. It was just like, that really drew me in. Interesting character.
Absolutely. Lovely film. Loved it. Lovely storytelling. Good acting. Can't go wrong. I mean, it's the combo of things. One of the films like that that was a surprise to me was Being John Malkovich. I mean, now it's 15 years old, but same thing. You go, it's going to be a sci-fi thing. But then you start watching and you understand this guy immediately. And I was in it, one of my top 10 all-time favorite films, because it has heart, you know, and Lars had heart. And so that goes back to that whole emotion. It's not artifice. It's not trying to create these big events or explosions or plot points. It really is emotion of, you know, emotional life of a character that we are interested in. Because we understand, you know, we have the context to understand why and what's happening. And it unfolds very nicely. Other films, you know, to think of American Beauty, same thing. A wonderful non-event kind of film that is just so rich. Sideways, same thing. We understand these people and the context of the premise. And so we just follow them. We just love to see what's going to happen. We really don't care what's going to happen. It's just fun to observe.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the films that you've mentioned sort of have ensemble kind of cast instead of just a single person following through sort of the hero's journey kind of a thing. But there's interesting films like Magnolia, where you have these cast of characters with all interwoven, or Crash, the one that won the Academy Award, that have these interesting storylines where all of these characters, we follow all of them, and they weave together. I always love stories like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's another one of those must-haves is the single main protagonist, which, you know, ensemble stories don't have to have that. Magnolia is a perfect example. Pulp Fiction is a great example. The Big Chill, you know, a lot of great films don't have this single main hero and the hero's journey. And the hero's journey is perfectly fine. I mean, it worked. You know, it's the basic premise of Star Wars, right? So, I mean, it works for that type of mythical film structure. But you don't have to have it. And I think it's a big mistake when people try to apply. It's almost like having tools, right? You have to have 50 different tools if you're a carpenter, right? You can't fix everything with a hammer. And wanting to use the hero's journey for every story is like using a hammer when you have a screw. I mean, you need a screwdriver. You know what I mean? So that's why it's. I absolutely believe in the fact that each story has to have its own set of different little idiosyncrasies, and that's what makes them magical. One of my favorite films, Persona, old Bergman film, black and white from the 60s. Is about a character who stops talking, an actress who stops talking, and then she spends, you know, a few weeks in a remote beach home with an nurse, and the only person here is the nurse who has any dialogue. So for an hour and a half, we watch a nurse talking to a non-responsive other person, two-character story, and it's a masterpiece. You know, if somebody tried to sell you this idea in Hollywood, they'd be like, come on. Yeah.
That's
one person, one dialogue. There's no dialogue. It's not really a dialogue because it takes two for a dialogue, right? So that's and yet you watch it and you're mesmerized and totally like, oh my god, how the hell did this guy pull this off? And it's such an amazing story. And you know, funny enough, there's a funny anecdote that you know Casablanca. A few years ago, they took that script, the original script, changed the name. And I think they used the original name, Everybody Goes to Rick's, and sent it out to a bunch of studio development executives in Hollywood. And it got rejected completely across the board. You know, so you go like, okay, well, you know, who knows? You're willing moments if nobody knows anything. So I do believe in that.
That's the truth. So we have people who are aspiring story writers, novelists, you know, even filmmakers probably listening to this, and even those of us that are established. What are some, you know, one or two tips and tricks that you have for kind of breaking out of that mold? We know those rules are there, and sometimes it's easy for us to fall into them. What are some ways that we can break out of that, some creative tips on how to change our writing style or our point of view or to actually, you know, create some content that is different and alternative?
Well, you know, it's the things I try to apply to myself. First of all, for beginning writers, I'd say just go ahead and output a bunch of stuff first without any expectation. I think expectations are the thing that kills a lot of writing because we're like, oh, I'm going to write this first screenplay and I'm going to sell it and I'll have a career and all that. So it doesn't work like that. The first five screenplays are going to be pretty bad anyway. So you might as well just get them out of your system and writing them, learn certain things. Second is if you can find a mentor, somebody in the industry, not a seminar guru who tells you his paradigm, but a real screenwriter, you know, somebody who can really, really help you understand the important stuff, you know, like setups, builds, and payoffs, escalations, context, theme and what's it about, dilemmas, you know, questions, all these kind of tools that you just need to have in your arsenal as a writer, you know, suspense and things like that. And then the third thing is just read wonderful screenplays and break them down. I mean, it's all out there. All the information is out there. You know, like Hitchcock was one of the master storytellers. And everything that we've seen today that people go, oh, my God, you know, Tarantino invented this. Actually, there's a guy who did it like 40 years before that. His name is Hitchcock. He did all of it. If you look at his entire body of work, this guy created all of these alternative structures, used them in a variety of films. Amazing guy. You can say, oh, you can have a main protagonist switch. Psycho, right? And then you have other films like that just, you know, Place Beyond the Pines, Color of Money, Fargo. You have a full-on main protagonist switch in the middle, and it's done in such a way that you don't miss a beat. So when somebody tells you another rule, like, oh, yeah, main hero has to have a goal, you can't have that switch. That's just not true, because we have these examples of wonderful films who've done it wonderfully. So don't just take the written word just because it's in a book as the Bible and the gospel. You know, you have to figure it out for yourself and really, like, pick the genres. You know, it took me a very long time. I always admired, you know, Bergman and Fellini, and it took me a very long time to find what's true to me, which is mostly like a satire kind of genre, right? So for many years I was writing these scripts that were not me, and it just didn't feel right until I maybe on my 10th script landed on this. Okay, well this just feels right in my DNA, which is this more satire, adult comedy, humor type of thing. But I only could do that after I've gone through the experience and analyzed a lot of these films and broken down. So, oh, okay, this is how it works. Versus you have to have an inciting incident on page 17 because somebody told you so, you know.
You know, a lot of the people listening to our show like suspense, read suspense, love, you know, stories like that. Are there any movies that jump into your mind? Like you mentioned Psycho, which was a great paradigm-breaking, you know, suspense story. Any great suspense movies, maybe indie films that we should have seen but haven't, that pop into your mind, you say, oh, man, yes, everybody has to watch this movie. And maybe we've never even heard of it.
Yeah, suspense to me is like such an important element of all storytelling, just because it keeps our interest, and it needs to be part of every story, really, not just a kind of thriller type of suspense that we traditionally think of.
You know, you mentioned Fargo. I think, you know, Blood Simple by the Coen brothers was really nice.
Yes.
Simple movie, but also good suspense,
fabulous.
Well written, nice twists.
Fabulous. There's a French film called Le Cercle Rouge, The Red Circle, from the 70s. Melville is the director. I love him. He was one of the more traditional storytellers in the New Wave. Definitely great suspense film that a lot of people haven't seen. Cercle Rouge, I would highly recommend it. Not a lot of dialogue, very behavioral, wonderful to watch. A lovely film that some people may have not seen that has great suspense and it's not a typical suspense story is Stranger Than Fiction.
Oh, yeah. Stranger Than Fiction.
You've seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the Will Ferrell story.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. I don't know what I would call it. It's not really suspense. It's not really, it's humor, but it's drama. It's a great film, yeah.
Yeah, but it uses the suspense of what else is going to happen to this guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what sustains us. And so it's not necessarily a suspense film per se, right? A Spanish film, The Sea Inside, it's maybe like 10 years old now, with Javier Bardem, and he's a guy, paraplegic, who wants to basically be euthanized. So not a very fun premise, right? But wonderful suspense in that premise. Again, not a suspense film per se. A more suspense type of film that I love is Snatch. Same thing, maybe 10 years old, 12 years old film. Guy Ritchie directed with Brad Pitt and Farina and Jason Statham.
Man, I have the sense that I saw it, but I can't remember it. But I do remember it.
Fun, you know, not intellectual or anything, just fun. It's a heist film, basically, about a huge diamond that happens in London, and it involves, you know, bare-knuckle boxing and a variety of other weird stuff. It's just hysterical. I just love that film. That's a great suspense.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Man, this has been a blast. This has been really great. Where can people keep up with you online, your website, or how do we keep track of you and your projects?
Ah, thank you. Yeah, I have a website. It's my full name, .com, so ivoraza.com. It actually links to a Vimeo page, which is much easier to update than a website, and I constantly have new spots that go on, so that's why. But if you go to that website, the link is there.
Awesome. So that's ivoraza.com, ivoraza.com.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we wanted to thank you for being our guest today, Ivo, and also thanks to everybody for listening. Join us next time. We'll be talking with award-winning author and story coach Susan May Warren on the secrets to engaging and inspiring your listeners and your readers. And in the meantime, my latest releases and books are all on stephenjames.net.
And you can check out my schedule and upcoming projects at thinkjose.com.
And for more info about our guests and to check out our other broadcasts, click to thestoryblender.com. And always remember,
the art of the story is all in the blend.
We'll see you next time.